Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Roker Report podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. It's Gav back ahead of the Portsmouth game. A little bit unusual, I don't normally do these. Chris is on a little bit of a sabbatical this week. I say sabbatical, he's probably just chilling with his feet up. So I am taking over the reins for the preview pod and I'm delighted to be joined today by our friend from the PO Forecast, the Pompey podcast, Andy Mitchell-Moore. Andy, how are you doing?
Hello, not too bad, thank you. Yeah, lovely to be here. I probably would have been slightly more positive if we'd chatted before the midweek game, sort of the most boring game on the planet against Wimbledon. But yeah, it's lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
On that game, beforehand, I checked the lineups on Tuesday night and I saw your team and I thought, that's a proper team, that. You know, decent players in pretty much every position. Thought AFC Wimbledon aren't really up to much. I was a bit surprised, actually, that you didn't manage to even score a goal in that game. What went on Tuesday? Why did Pompey not come away from Wimbledon with 3 points?
Yeah, it's one of those games where it's a real pity it wasn't played on paper, to be honest with you, because I'd have backed us to win that. yeah, I think it was pretty laboured, to be honest with you. First half, Wimbledon were genuinely the better side. It would have been quite difficult to argue with it being unfair if they'd gone in one goal up at the break. I think Pompey pulled it back together a bit in the second half and we definitely had the better of the second 45. But it was one of the first games, I think, where the Cowleys got sort of out-tacticked a bit. It was The system didn't work. And there have been a few games this season when the players just haven't turned up. And that is what it is. It's League One. I'm sure it happens to Sunderland. It happens to Pompey. That's why they're League One standard players. But on this occasion, I feel like the system didn't really work. The wing-back overlaps, honestly, if we'd had a drink every time a ball to an overlapping wing-back had been intercepted by a Wimbledon player who'd read the run, like, we wouldn't have made it till half-time, honestly, with the amount we'd have drunk. So the system just didn't quite click and we struggled to deal with the high press, which we're normally quite good at battling against and has worked fairly well against Sunderland in the past, actually, targeting against the high press. But it didn't come together on Tuesday night. It would be very easy to sit here and say that it was because there were two new signings in the squad and they didn't really gel, but it wasn't that in the slightest. They both had perfectly decent games. The new centre-back in particular, Hayden Carter. It just didn't come together, to be honest with you. It was very frustrating to watch. And, you know, since we had sort of an enforced COVID break, I think we played Morecambe on. It was either the 11th or the 12th of December and won that game. And since then, we've really struggled to get any form together. We've, you know, struggled, apart from the game against Exeter when we nicked a 3-2 in the last minute. It really hasn't looked particularly coherent, which is odd because, as you say, the names on paper, it looks like a very strong lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just feel like we need something to break our way. Like Malon Romeo had a shot from sort of 25, 30 yards out that hit the crossbar and went over, and Wimbledon keeper made a couple of good saves, and you just need one of those to sort of go your way and it can turn the tide a little bit. But that doesn't seem to quite be happening at the moment.
Yeah, it seems like such a long time since we played you last. That was at the start of October. Pretty infamous game because the pitch was absolutely soaked and drenched and it just didn't suit Sunderland on the day and it did suit Portsmouth. What's your memories of that day in particular then? Because for our fans, it was very miserable. Really long trip down the country to see a game where we didn't turn up and we got out for a little bit. And really, Portsmouth took the points deservedly. If I remember rightly, It was 3-0 at half time.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Oh, we had a wonderful time. Great day out. To be honest with you, expectations were fairly low for that game. We'd come in off, I think it was 2 defeats and 2 draws, or maybe even 3 defeats and 2 draws, hadn't won for a while. And expectations were not high. And I don't know what you're talking about with the pitch. We thought it was in excellent condition for the afternoon, to be honest with you. For comedy value, it was absolutely perfect. There were quite a few memes went flying around afterwards with some music to them. But it was unexpected. And I think from our side of things, we were pleasantly surprised that the referee didn't give in to what we saw as a lot of pressure. And I'm sure you'll have a different view on this, I'd imagine, from the other side of the stadium. But with it being 3-0 at halftime, the weather obviously did get a lot worse in the second half, or the pitch state did anyway. But I don't know. You're going to disagree with me, I'd imagine. But I thought the referee showed quite a lot of guts to actually see the game out, because by the end of the game, it wasn't really playable. But I think it was the preferable option when it was, you know, 3-0, 4-0, just to see the game out. Because I don't think the result would have changed. That's probably not what the law book says the referee should do, to be fair. That's just me talking as a football fan. But we had a great time. One of my friends came down for his first ever game at Fratton. He's a West Ham fan. But we had one of our season tickets was going spare. And I sort of managed his expectations all the way down. So I live in Oxford, but I go down for all the home games. And I managed his expectations all the way down on the train. And at halftime, he was like, what are you talking about? You're brilliant. I was like, no. If you'd, watched us losing to Cambridge United at home a few weeks before and losing to Burton the game before, he'd have had a different opinion. But yeah, it was one of those days where it came together. And as you say, that Sunderland just didn't cope with the conditions. You said it was there. It was a style of football issue, but you just couldn't adapt. And I felt like Pompey adapted a lot better to the conditions. And I don't think it's even because they were the home team, because no one's used to playing on pitches like that. You know, it's not, you don't train for that in the slightest. You know, you need to rent a swimming pool. We don't have those facilities.
It was a strange one, really, because I remember going into the game, we were in pretty good form and you weren't, as you said. So everybody was sort of expecting that to be quite a big sort of point in the season for Sunderland, in terms of we get a win at Portsmouth, that really cements our status as a top team in this league. And yeah, it was a blip really for us, that one. But we've seen, to be fair, in other games this season with Sunderland, we've seen when the pitch isn't quite right, it doesn't suit the way we like to play, because we've played teams off the park this season. But then it was just the other week we played Lincoln at home. And it was our pitch, and for whatever reason, and Lee Johnson came out after the game and said he hadn't requested this, but the pitch was soaked before the game.
Which I read that, yeah. I read about that, actually.
Yeah, so, I mean, advice to any, and I'll probably get shot for saying this on a Sunderland podcast, but advice to any of the Portsmouth ground staff listen would probably be to just soak the pitch, because next time we come to Fratton Park, because, it just doesn't suit us at all. It doesn't suit us at all. Hopefully this time around at the Stadium of Light, though, our ground staff will have had their wrists slapped and they won't fall for it again, because, it didn't go down particularly well. Maybe we were just being a little bit sort of looking for an excuse to a reason why Sunderland was so bad against Lincoln, but it was probably something to do with the pitch, why we weren't able to play our normal stuff. But that's enough about Sunderland. Your season so far, then. So since that game, it's been sort of up and down. Would that be fair to say? I mean, you're 9th in the table, you've won 10, you've drawn 8, you've lost 7. I was looking, you're one of the lowest goal scorers in the league. You don't score many goals. I mean, take away those 4 against Sunderland, you've scored 25 in what, just over half a season? So what would you say, if you had to sort of rank where Pompey are at right now in terms of the season so far, 9th in the table, where would you put things?
I think expectations had to be managed a bit this year. The Cowleys have come in and inherited a squad that, you know, I think 15 players came in over summer, but there still was some jacket, like I use the word deadwood, but I think that's a little bit harsh, but there were some players there that they clearly didn't really want in the squad.
Yeah.
Who have been, you know, they've been forced to play just through needing to field an 11 essentially. But I think it's a weird one, because if you look on paper, I mean, even at the recent form, it's not actually that bad, because we had a good run of form up till Christmas. We've lost like 1 in 12 or something. And obviously that's a decent return, or maybe 2 in 12. It's not a huge number anyway, but there's a lot of drawn games in there, and drawn games, for example, you know, Cambridge and Sheffield Wednesday both had players sent off, and we had a decent whack of the game playing against 10 and didn't even look like taking advantage of it. We've looked pretty toothless going forward. John Marquis really struggled in the last, I think it was something like 11 in his last 55 games or something he scored for Pompey playing up top. He really struggled to find the net. Ellis Harrison came back from an injury and again was never really a prolific goal scorer, but he struggled. Both of those players have now left. So Marquis has gone to Lincoln and Harrison has gone to Fleetwood.
Yeah.
So we've struggled to find the net a bit, and generally Pompey kind of share the goals around in terms of, you know, using the wide players. This goes back to, you know, when we had Jamal Lowe on one wing, who I'm sure Sunderland have got very fond memories of. But like, even then, we used to share the goals around between the wingers. That kind of got carried on as we brought Marcus Harness in as his replacement. So you're looking at sharing the goals between Harness, Curtis, whoever's playing up top and whoever's playing Cam. But the contributions from them have tapered off slightly, especially from Curtis, has had a bit of a lean run of form. And that sounds a bit silly saying that when he came on against Exeter in the Football League Trophy a couple of weeks ago and scored 2 in 3 minutes. But that was very much, you know, the exception to the rule. But yeah, it's kind of looked very toothless where the goals are coming from. Set piece delivery has got worse. I genuinely think you'll notice at the weekend how often we failed to beat the first man from corners.
That one's interesting to me, because the Cowleys were pretty famous when they were at Lincoln for being really good with set pieces, weren't they? They were given quite a lot of credit for their imagination and creativity when it came to setting up for corners and free kicks.
It's been imaginative, I'll give you that. I think the first game back after the COVID break, our first corner, every single attacking player lined up on sort of the far left corner of the 18-yard box, almost outside of the penalty area. Or sorry, it's the near left corner of the 18-yard box to where the corner was being taken from. And everyone thought this was sort of some tactical masterclass. And I think we played it short and then just lost possession and then ended up, you know, nearly getting caught out on the break. So it didn't work out too well. And we haven't seen it since. But the thing is, even with all the creativity in the world, if the person taking the corner doesn't beat the first man, then, you know, you don't get a chance to execute what you've been doing in the middle. But, Marcus Harness was taking corners for the majority of the last game at Wimbledon. And I really rate him as a player, but the delivery was so ordinary. And then Lee Brown took over in the second half and it improved slightly. Obviously, Lee Brown's playing left-footed. He's, you know, you're getting a different angle of attack compared to a right-footed Marcus Harness there from both sides. But yeah, it's been frustrating with the set pieces. I do think you'll notice that this weekend, unless they suddenly have managed to turn it around during the week. But I just can't see us scoring 4 in a game. It seems like a long time ago that we did that, you know, against your guys down here. In, as you said, it was in October. But it's been very toothless. They seem to have lost confidence in the final third. So we're very neat, very tidy for the first 2/3 of the pitch. And then where you need to be incisive, and then what they're trying to do is suddenly upping the pace. And, you know, they spread the play left, spread the play right, back to the middle, spread the play left. And you're looking for that momentary, you know, gap to appear because teams are slow getting back into it in their new shape. It's that bit there where they need to be quick and incisive, and it's not happening. Either the quick incisive pass isn't accurate enough and the attack just breaks down, or it's just all very, very slow and we end up, you know, just keeping possession but playing it back to central defence or back to Bazunu, who then plays a long ball forward and you kind of go back to square one. It's been that, the movement in the final third just hasn't been as quick and incisive as it had been at an earlier point in the season. And that might be because they had 3 weeks off and they're struggling with, you know, match sharpness. But, you know, we've had, 5 games now since that break. It really should be starting to come back by now. And it didn't really show signs of that. You know, the MK Dons game, we had moments at home. But our response to both times they scored was dreadful. We didn't deserve, I don't think, anything out of that game. A draw, a push. Wimbledon, again, probably deserved a draw, didn't deserve a win. You know, it's not like we're being robbed of 3 points every time. That's the concern, I think.
Yeah, Cowley then, he was linked with the Sunderland job when Lee Johnson took it. From what I believe, it was between Danny Cowley and Johnson for the job. And it was obviously Johnson that our owner and sporting director went with. So I've always kept a keen eye on him because you know, he could have been our manager. It could have been Danny Cowley in the dugout this weekend for Sunderland and not Portsmouth. Do the fans like him at Pompey? Are they taken to him? Because when we spoke to Huddersfield fans around the time of that appointment of Lee Johnson, when the job was up and Cowley was in for it, obviously the Huddersfield fans weren't sold on him. The Lincoln fans loved him. So, yeah, how do Pompey fans feel about him?
Yeah, you can see why. I mean, they obviously divided opinion a bit, especially at Huddersfield, but the general vibe is they've completely got the club. I think they were the right appointment for the Portsmouth identity at the time, in that fans of pretty much all ages, you know, from around 20-something upwards, who remember the fan-owned years really well, have always had sort of very personal affiliation with the club, because, you know, fan-owned times were dreadful. Everyone pulled together. You know, we were donating money to help buy footballs for them to use on match days almost. It was that level of, you know, we're all in this together. And then that identity of feeling united with the club kind of disappeared a bit, partially because, you know, Kenny Jackett's modus operandi was, I don't really show any emotion, I'm very calm, didn't really interact with the fan base very much. He wasn't overly keen to come on the podcast. We didn't get him onto the PO forecast at any point, and we really had wanted to, even if it was just to show a more chatty, almost human side to him.
Yeah.
And everyone felt quite distant from the club. And then obviously the COVID-19 situation hasn't helped that at all, with the break everyone had from the games. And then the Cowleys have come in, and basically they've just, you know, they're the antithesis of Kenny Jackett. They're everything he wasn't, in that they're passionate on the touchline. They get the fan base. I mean, within, I said there that we tried to get Kenny Jackett on for quite a while onto the PO forecast. Danny Cowley came on within 2.5 weeks of being in the job. He was just straight on and said, yeah, no dramas, and then wanted to get to know some of the fans, interacted with them on Twitter for a bit, which he's doing less now. But in terms of making a good first impression, it was, you know, exactly the right thing to do. He goes to watch like the under-14s. He goes to watch the girls' teams. He interacts with people on the street on a day-to-day basis, just in a way that we've not seen for a while. So, on a personal level, the fact that him and Nicky are both clearly just thoroughly good blokes is what Pompey needed. And I think, on a similar note, sort of being the opposite of Kenny Jackett, where I see football management and football coaching in 5 to 10 years' time is the Cowley model. It's the Lee Johnson model. It's not the Kenny Jackett traditional model, where, yeah, you know, you can see that, you know, both of our managers are very modern types of coaches, very hands-on. I mean, everyone always makes jokes about the Cowleys and their iPad that goes everywhere with them, but it's all very, very intricate. And I think the word he used when he spoke to us was how he wants to choreograph everything. So it's a choreographed movement. And it's almost like a rehearsed dance when you're on the ball, and it's a rehearsed dance when you're off the ball to get back into position. So you're doing the same thing every time. And as far as I'm concerned, that modern way of coaching is what everyone will be doing in 10 years' time. And you're seeing it more and more with younger coaches coming into the game, I think. It's the future, I think, whereas with Kenny Jackett, we very much felt like we were behind the times. And there is frustration because the style of football at the moment is not that pretty to watch. But I'd say the vast majority of Portsmouth fans who have got their heads screwed on would say that this isn't the season the Cowleys get judged on, because they are still offloading players like, you know, Downing left the other day, who was a Kenny Jackett acquisition that just went completely wrong. Marquis is gone, Harrison is gone. And the Cowleys' track record so far with loans has been pretty good in terms of bringing in, you know, they brought in Gavin Bazunu, Joe Morel, both international standard and look it players.
Yeah.
And there have been a couple in there that haven't worked out so well. So Aziz from Arsenal has just gone back. Ahadmi has gone to Burton, hasn't he? He was with Norwich under 23s, but he signed for Burton now. Didn't work out with us, but they've got at least a season in the absolute bank for most Pompey fans, I think. And there's not going to be any pressure on them if we don't make the playoffs this season. Well, there will be from a select few on social media, but the majority of the fan base wouldn't even have them in the ballpark of being in trouble for their job if we even don't make the playoffs this season, I don't think.
So like Sunderland, for instance, under Lee Johnson, we now have a defined way of playing. Everybody knows how we like to play football. We like to keep it on the deck. We like to build from the back. The forward line, they all work hard when we don't have the ball. And that's our style of play. And we can now go to players and we can now say, this is how we play football. Here's the evidence. Would you like to come and join us? Does Danny Cowley have a style of football, would you say? A defined way of playing?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very distinguishable from what we had previously in terms of... There's a few very obvious differences. I mean, I think it was first home game of the season. Crew, I think we had. And it was the first time we'd all seen Gavin Bazunu play in person. And we kind of looked up at one point. We had a corner. And it was just the fact that Gavin Bazunu was stood in the centre circle for an attacking corner. And, you know, that panicked us all a little bit. But it was obviously just the first example we saw of the Cowley plan of how they want the team lining up in terms of maintaining possession. But, yeah, their identity is clearly playing... Well, I'd imagine we'll line up with three centre-backs and two attacking wing-backs unless they change it because it didn't really work against Wimbledon. But I imagine they'd keep that formation with the two attacking wing-backs trying to provide as many overlaps as possible. The difficulty we had against Wimbledon there was because the attacking wing-backs' runs were getting intercepted and blocked off, we were left very, very narrow and the ball got very sort of congested and bogged down in the centre of midfield. So potentially something that Sunderland could be focusing on is that this weekend. But yeah, the Cowley play, you're seeing a choreographed high press where it's not just one player doing it and getting it passed around, which is utterly pointless. And again, what we had John Marquis doing for months under Kenny Jackett, which must have infuriated John Marquis having to do that every game. But it's more choreographed now with multiple players closing down. One thing that I think, was it the last time we played you? Maybe the time before. I really noticed how many times we won the ball back in the attacking third, thanks to that high press, and that's been noticeable in a number of games this season. How often we get possession turnover in an attacking position because of that high press, or at least we win, you know, an attacking throw-in through panicking defences into making mistakes. Mm. So yeah, that high press, playing out for the back, Bazunu, if he's got the ball at hand, again, this was slightly different against Wimbledon, which was surprising, but generally he'll play it short and try and play out from the back. We've got central midfielder players like, I mean, Joe Morel, he's very much a case of play the ball into his feet, he will turn and go if he drops slightly deep. And again, on an ideal day, it's very easy for me to sound like I'm bigging Pompey up here. The results don't really support me at the moment for the last few games. But on their day, that quick attacking zippy football that's played out from the back, we can turn defence into attack very, very quickly in about three or four passes. And it is all about that sudden change in playing speed. It will be very, very almost walking pace at times, which can be frustrating when you're watching, when it just goes left to right, to left to right, back to centre defender, back forward, left to right, play it between the centre midfielders a little bit. And it doesn't look like there's a run being made, but you can see that what the Cowleys have tried to instill is that sudden change in pace where they're being taught to identify when the moment is right and then execute without, you know, any real warning. And when that works, it works spectacularly. When it doesn't work, what you see is, we'll keep the ball for a long time and then try something extravagant and give it away. So it's very much, if it works, you look like a genius. If it doesn't work, the crowd can get frustrated quickly, or some parts of the crowd can get frustrated very quickly.
Well, yeah, that sort of sounds like how we used to play when Jack Ross was manager. But now it's interesting you talk about the high press, because that's sort of what we do, really. But what we find is when teams press high against us, we do struggle. So it could be interesting to see how the two styles mesh up at the weekend. But before we talk about the game at the weekend, I just want to touch on the transfer window. I know you've mentioned a few players that you've signed and got rid of. The one that's probably most intriguing, because you haven't signed a great deal of players yet, is Tyler Walker coming in from Coventry to presumably replace Marquis up front. Are you happy with that signing? Because he is a player who, at this level, a couple of seasons ago, was pretty prolific, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's played with the Cowleys before as well. So he was with the Cowleys at Lincoln. So he's come back to, you know, a relationship that he obviously knows works, which is in itself quite reassuring that the Cowleys are leaving players with positive enough relationships that they want to come back and play for them again, which again isn't something you'd see with Kenny Jackett, quite the opposite. But I mean, there's a whole other podcast on that that your listeners wouldn't care about in the slightest, I imagine. But yeah, Tyler Walker has come in. His record at Coventry wasn't spectacular in the Championship, but a lot of those were sort of sub-appearances. His League One record, again, this is probably slightly out, it's off the top of my head, I think it was sort of 14 and 28 he scored in the season before moving into the Championship. So he's got a half-decent record. You know, we'd take a 1-2 goal scorer at the moment compared to, you know, what Marquess was 1 in 5 for the last season and a season and a bit. The slight concern is 2 9s have gone out. Harrison and Marquess have both gone out. Only one has come in. It's not the end of the transfer window yet, so we're not hitting the panic button. But he looked fairly bright against Wimbledon, considering he hadn't even trained with the team yet. He arrived and hadn't actually really met the team at all until the trip to the ground. Bedded in pretty well. Wasn't a spectacular debut, but looked like he had some pace on him. Again, some of the Coventry fans said that he can look a little bit lazy at times, but that didn't. I mean, you'd hope it wouldn't come across in your first appearance for a new team,
no.
But it did. That's not the time to be lazy. But it didn't. It didn't look like he was, you know, giving anything less than 10 out of 10 in terms of effort. But I mean, you could have the greatest striker playing for you. It's the service that is going to be the deciding factor, and it's the service we've been struggling with a little bit recently. But I think he's probably going to take a few games to sort of hit the ground running and get to know the system a little bit. But he's played with the Cowleys before. He knows exactly what their expectations of him are going to be. He's got a decent track record in this division. And, you know, the Portsmouth fans who are saying, well, he can't cut it in the Championship, you've just got to quietly remind them that we're actually 9th in League One. And I wouldn't put money on us even making the playoffs at the moment. So we need to maybe temper our expectations a little bit there. But he's a bright player by the looks of it. I'm basing this all off, you know, one game that I've watched him in full. He looks like a bright player. I think similarly to George Hurst, if he gets that first goal under his belt, you'd hope more would follow. That's what's happened with Hurst a little bit, in that he scored his first goal in senior men's league football and has looked a lot more dangerous since then. He's got his confidence up a little bit. So hopefully that'll be the case with Tyler Walker this weekend.
And it could be quite interesting to see whether one of our players jumps on the coach back to Portsmouth with your squad, because
yes,
it looks as though Denver Hume has probably already agreed to join up with you guys. I presume it's being held off because of the game, which would be sensible from Sunderland's perspective and understandable given, you know, Portsmouth probably want the player. They'd be like, yeah, okay, fair enough, we'll take him, but we'll wait till after Saturday. So yeah, it looks like Denver Hume is going to Pompey. The fee that I've heard is around $200,000 with a sell-on fee, with a sell-on percentage down the line, perhaps, which could work out well for Sunderland. Do you know much about Denver? Is there anything in particular that you're sort of expecting from him as a player?
I mean, we had a brief conversation about this the other day, and I think we're looking to fill that sort of role on the left side of defence, which is, I'm assuming, where the Cowleys would be wanting to utilise him, because...
Yeah. Oh, he's very much a left-footed player. I mean, he doesn't really have a right foot, but is an attacking fullback. Yeah, pretty decent player at this level, I would say.
Yeah, it sounds like he's more defensively sound than what we're currently implementing in that left wing-back role, which is frequently Rico Hackett, who is very much more of a left-attacking winger and is... As I really rate him as a player, but it's not his number one position, and he's been caught short a little bit in that position, fairly costly, in fairly costly situations a couple of times. So I think they're looking at bringing in a left-sided defender who is potentially going to be a little bit more stable, is probably the right word, sort of solid, if not spectacular. And we've heard mixed things from the Sunderland fan base. There are some comments we've seen of people offering to sort of drive him down, or, you know, pay for his plane ticket, which seems a little bit harsh. But
very harsh, yeah. He's not as bad as a lot of people make out. I think the problem with Denver is that his contract situation in the summer went on that long that it soured people's opinion of him. But for the most part, he's been solid, like you've just said, solid enough. You know, I wouldn't say he's particularly great at attacking or defending. He does like to get forward, and he's got a bit of pace, and he's good sort of going down the outside, overlapping, but his main issue really is staying fit. And
that sounds like the sort of player we like signing, that does.
Yeah, well, the thing is though, because he's been second fiddle this season, he's had no reason to really get injured. So he did actually pick up an injury, I think, in a cup game and was out for a little while. But to be fair, we signed Dennis Sirkin from Tottenham, and he's our first choice there. And even when Denver's been fit and Sirkin hasn't played, Lee Johnson's preferred Lyndon Gooch, who's actually a wide player who's pretty much right-footed predominantly, playing there in front of him. So I can understand why they may be happy enough for him to leave, because really he's got to play games. But he's, yeah, I think if you can keep him fit, you're not going to find many more solid left backs to play at this level. This is his ceiling, though, I think.
Okay, I mean, at the end of the day, we're ninth in League One. At the moment, League One being a ceiling is fine as long as it's top end of League One. And it is that solid and stable that we need because, you know, we're not conceding huge numbers of goals, don't get me wrong, but that left wing back position is probably where we look most vulnerable now in terms of a player not playing in their natural role. So it makes absolute sense that that's the next sort of hole they try and fill because we're a bit square peg round hole there at the moment. Yeah. And then after that, I imagine it'll be in hopefully one more nine just to sort of fill out the squad. And not in a, we need another striker, you know, I've said every football fan ever, but we've had two go out and only one come in. And if Hurst and Walker are starting up top, we don't really have any other nines available. Ronan Curtis has started playing up there a little bit. Harness has played there a couple of times. There's a lot of fluidity at the moment in terms of who plays where. So the wide players all occasionally muck in at 10 and occasionally muck in at 9 as well. But yeah, I think it would make sense for us to be signing him. I'm not surprised that that's the next position they've decided to focus on.
Yeah, and you've got to think as well, the transfer market this year in particular is not particularly... it's not as though there are lots of players looking for new clubs. It's just a sign, I guess, of the times. I heard the Peterborough chairman refer to it as a footballing recession. And when you look at sort of the money being spent, there isn't a great deal going about and there aren't a great deal of clubs willing to let players go. But yeah, the game at the weekend then is a big one for us, I think, because when you look at the top of the table, we're sat third. We're joint with Wigan, who have got four games in hand on us. Wickham are only a point ahead and then Rotherham are breathing. They've got two games in hand on us, actually. So we need to win. We've not done well enough in the last three games in this last week. We've picked up, you know, nowhere near enough points, which has sort of meant that this game is now very, very important for Sunderland, which heaps the pressure on us, I guess. And I don't know if you'd agree, makes it a little bit more relaxing for Pompey, I guess. They can come up here and they can sort of feel their way into the game, take the time, frustrate us maybe, which is what a lot of teams like to do at the stadium alike. But would you be happy with a point or are you wanting all three?
I'd snap your hand off for a point. Absolutely. That'd be a very good point away from home. Taking into account our last couple of performances as well. I mean, it sounds like you'd only be happy with three this weekend realistically then because of the sort of the league table situation. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because, you know, even below Rotherham, you've got MK Dons, who are only on 46 points. So, you know, we lose and they win. That's a 3-point gap between us and them, and they've got a game in hand. So, yeah, Sunderland really need to get back into the mood and, the mood of winning games. We've been on a few good runs this season, and then we've also interspersed those with runs of draws and losses. So, well, yeah, it's an important
Lee
one for
Johnson,
us.
Isn't it?
Well, yeah, I'm always sort of, I don't know, a lot of fans like to throw that around and I can understand why. I try not to. But, I mean, if we don't win at the weekend, yeah, then it's another streak, isn't it? So, yeah, pressure's totally on us. But from what you're saying, you'd snap our hands off for a point. But how do you see the Cowleys approaching this one? Like I've just said, when teams come here and if they do take points off us, they tend to do it by frustrating us, working hard off the ball, you know, making the fans in the ground frustrated after 20, 25 minutes if it's still 0-0. Do you expect they'll approach it that way?
I think so, yeah. I think it's very different to the Wimbledon game in that, again, not any disrespect to FC Wimbledon, but when it got to 25, 30, 35 minutes and it was 0-0, their fans sort of grew into the game a bit more. They'd been very, you know, we didn't really hear them for the first 30, 35 minutes at all, and then they kind of grew into it a little bit. Whereas I think it would be kind of the opposite at the Stadium of Light, in that 30, 35 minutes, 40 minutes, and if you've not created anything clear cut, there are nerves and there is pressure, sort of similar to an Ipswich away when they're going through a bit of a dodgy run. It's very, very on a knife edge in terms of, you know, if they score early, then it can be a bit of a landslide because it's very difficult as an away fan when you're outnumbered, you know, 15-1 or something. If the home team has scored first, then, you know, it's very difficult to be loud and you know, assert some sort of effect on the game. Whereas, yeah, if it gets to 30, 35 minutes in and Sunderland have been frustrated and Pompey are starting to grow into the game, then it's just an entirely different feel to the game. So I do think they'll try and see out, you know, we're imagining that you're going to try and start fast and do what I've just described. I would imagine Pompey are going to try and nullify that early doors, grow into the game and then exploit things later on. So almost the opposite of what the home tie was, where we started so fast and, you know, we're out of sight by half time. I think it's more likely that we'll stay in the game, or we'll try to stay in the game until, you know, half time, and then try and push through into the second half when there are maybe more nerves and the players potentially getting a bit more stretched. Because as you say, if you need to win, you're going to be looking for those goals in the second half if they haven't come. When we're playing against teams who are opening up because they're attacking, it almost plays to our strengths a little bit. It's when we come up against, you know, two blocks of four or something that slow play in the final third and the lack of accuracy on that final pass is really making us suffer. So I'd imagine that'll be, well, that's what I would be doing if I was Danny Cowley in this position. Wait until the game opens up and then try and punish with a moment of quality in the second half.
Pretty much what Lincoln did, really.
Yeah,
pretty much what they did. Frustrated us, worked hard. And then Chris Maguire came up with a hat-trick. But yeah, we're past that now.
I was going to ask about it, but I won't. If you've just got through the emotional trauma of the celebrations, I'll let that one, Matt, go ask.
We'll not go over that. Predictions, then. What do you think might happen then? If you know, you said you wanted a point, you would snap your hand off. Yeah. Is that realistic?
I think it's realistic. I don't think it's going to be high scoring. I really don't. No. I think we're defensively good enough to not fall to pieces, especially now we've got three actual centre. Well, Conor Ogilvie is sort of more a left-sided centre-back, but has done an incredible job. We've basically got three proper centre-backs playing together now for the first time in a while. And Clark Robertson is now pretty much match fit as well, so he could, in theory, come in. He's been out injured for quite a while. So I wouldn't expect, unless you get a huge amount of joy on the wings and really exploit our two attacking wing-backs, because both of them, Romeo as well, amazing going forward, can be iffy defensively if he's put under pressure and make the wrong decision in a split second. But unless that happens, I wouldn't imagine they're going to fall to pieces and concede a load. I really don't see that happening. But similarly, I don't think we're cutting enough going forward to score a lot at the moment. So, I mean, if we lose, I don't think there'll be more than one goal in it. But I will. I think a 1-1 draw. That's the optimistic side of me. That's probably my my heart more than my head, but I'm absolutely going to represent my heart on a Sunderland podcast. I'm not going to come on here and actually speak common sense. That'd be insane. So I'll go with a 1-1 draw.
Nice. Well, cheers, Andy. Thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate the time, mate. Where can people find your podcast, your stuff before and after the game? I imagine, like me, a lot of people like to listen to what the opposition fans have got to say before and after the game.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're mostly around on Twitter. So either at PO4cast, so PO and then the number 4cast, or at Pompey News Now on Twitter. They post, well, basically the same group, but there's a podcast specific Twitter group. And yeah, the most recent episode that I was unable to make because I was ill actually previews the game with Hugh and Freddie. I listened to it back. Well worth a listen, I think. I'm probably slightly biased. But yeah, well worth a listen if you want to get an opposition view that's potentially slightly more in depth actually than what I've offered here, because they had a lot more statistics in front of them that they pulled out of the bag. But yeah, well worth a listen. Hopefully our prediction of taking something off you guys comes to fruition.
Now, hopefully for you. Yeah. Cheers, mate. Thank you very much for joining us.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.